anyone can make a change, the fear they have the will.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And Sansum Clinic, whose multi-specialty team of medical professionals have been providing quality care to you and your family for 98 years. And we're here today with Tamara Levinson, Executive Director of Grassroots Democrats HQ. Welcome.
Hi, welcome. Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're very glad for you to be here today. So let's begin by talking a little bit about, I think the name is pretty descriptive, but what is Grassroots Democrats?
The Grassroots Democrats is a grassroots organization that wants to meld the Democratic Party process along with the grassroots volunteer organizers in order for us to be flipping red seats to blue across the country. Our focus is right now to be focusing on defending the California 7 that we just won during this midterm election. We will be flipping the Senate, working on key state legislatures that are also flippable. And then once we are past the primary for the presidential campaign, we will become a presidential headquarters as well.
And what I think makes your organization unique is you're not talking about, you know, raising big dollars in Beverly Hills and paying for ads on TV. When you talk about grassroots, you're talking about people as young as high school students going to a phone bank and trying to get people engaged.
That is correct. We are all about finding the people who want to be engaged in political process, giving them the tools and the knowledge on how to do it, having them take off their hat of who they are so they can understand the districts as well as the candidates that they are working with, and be able to know how to engage the voter to understand and learn about the issues so that they know how to vote.
What's so interesting about the idea of people participating in the election process is that democracy only works when people participate. Democracy only works when people have some knowledge. And this country has sort of gone into a direction of 1 minute or 30-second TV ads as a way of getting information and a way of influencing voters. So what you're doing is essentially what I think the founders probably thought would happen 200-300 years ago.
There's a lot of misinformation because of, as you were talking about, the ads and the things that are put out there. What this is really the opportunity to do is to do early voter engagement so that people can understand what their issues are. What I find to be the most interesting, the most engaging, the most exciting is when you see a volunteer talking on the telephone or door knocking to a voter and they have an engaging conversation and there's an aha moment of, wait a minute, I care about a particular issue. If I vote, I can have my issue taken care of. The problem is that people believe that their vote doesn't matter. And we win elections one vote at a time by teaching people so that they understand their vote matters. Everybody's vote is exactly the same weight. And as long as we get as many people as possible voting, we can get what we need.
People complain all the time about what they don't like about the system. And yet we have one of the lowest voter rates in the free world. And, you know, it's one thing to complain when you lose and you participate. It's another thing to complain when you decide you're going to sit it out. And that, to me, is the most frustrating thing. You know, you happen to be an activist for Democrats. Well, the reality is there are more Democrats than Republicans. So if everyone voted, it really wouldn't be an issue. But people, for some reason, feel that they can get the benefits, if there are benefits, and not participate.
You know, I am the example of the people who, although I always voted, I did not participate in this political process. I woke up, it was during the presidential campaign, my daughter was asking me questions about how an election worked, what was happening, and I was listening to the rhetoric that was happening on the Republican side and realizing that this was my civil rights moment to stand up for things that I believed in. So I began to get involved.
When was slow down. Where was this? This is recently?
This was, it was the last presidential election is when I became a political activist. I have never.
Well, I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, no. I literally come from the nonprofit management, fundraising, and social work background. So I always cared about issues. And so I would work on the issues within our community, but I was one of those people that actually believed that I live in the United States. Things will be taken care of. It will be okay. So I can go out there and I can work on homelessness. I can work on issues and be a social worker. And what I found out, though, is that it doesn't matter how hard I work there. If we don't vote the right people into office to make the right choices, then we're going to run into the problems that we have now.
You're too young to remember Groucho Marx's TV show. No, I'm serious. You don't remember. Do you remember Groucho Marx's TV show, You Bet Your Life?
I actually do remember
that. So he had this thing where he had a duck that used to come down. If you said the secret word, you got an extra $50. If you said the right, well, you said the word ha-ha.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what we can give you, but that's the...
We are having the aha moment. Honestly, this is... when I was listening to the rhetoric that was taking place in the GOP, and I realized that I'm actually a first-generation American, and I wouldn't be here if somebody else had not stood up to sign for my family to be here. And because of that, I made it. The other half of my family did not make it out of Germany. And so I have a sense that I need to stand up for others. I started out this whole process so I would stand up for others. And now I'm where I am today, and I'm realizing, oh, my God, I'm standing up for me as well.
I saw a great cartoon of a bunch of Indians standing around talking and saying, we have to stop this illegal immigration.
Native Americans.
What did I say?
Indians.
Oh, I'm sorry. Native Americans.
Thank you.
Are you editing me?
I am.
Okay. You're right. You're right. Thank you. Politically correct is the byword here. What is your background? You're a social worker, which is a fine career because that's what my wife does.
Yes. So I have an undergraduate degree in social work and Hebrew studies. I went on to my graduate work because I realized that in order to make organizations function better, I wanted to have that MBA that would allow me to help nonprofit organizations run. So I went to Brandeis University and I got my graduate degree as an MBA in nonprofit management and a concentration in Jewish communal service work. I was the director of fund distribution for the United Way, both in Princeton, New Jersey, and Los Angeles. Went on to work in a variety of Jewish communal organizations. And when I started to volunteer for this presidential campaign, and we all thought that we were going to win, I thought I was going to go back to my field. And instead, I found out that I can organize large scales of volunteers to activate in a way that they want to do work and teach them what they need to do and motivate them, and then we can make change. So I've completely changed my career path. I'm now a professional community organizer.
And you have no, or let's put it this way, when you made your first telephone call, did you find it awkward, or were you always just naturally able to pick up the phone and dial and dial and dial and dial? Or do you have to learn that?
You actually just made an assumption that I feel comfortable doing it now.
Oh, okay.
So the truth is, I teach people that that the campaigns don't care about the first three phone calls that you make a mistake on. They care about the hundreds of phone calls you're going to make next. So it's all about an investment. Each time I read a new script, I stumble on it. I stutter. Stuttering is a problem that I've had since childhood. So talking on the phone, I hate talking on the phone. But I will talk on the phone till the cows come home if that's going to make a difference to get a voter to understand that their vote matters, to hear them talk about what their issues are so that they can understand what the candidate's stance is on those issues, and to convince them that they need to get off their tush, go into the voting booth, and to actually vote. And so I will continue to do that. But no, talking on the phone, I hate talking on the phone.
So when you talk to somebody, is it not only more likely, but is it almost universal that the only people that will engage with you are people that already believe in what the message is going to be, and really what you're trying to do is move them to participate? I can't imagine making a cold call and convincing somebody who's a Republican to be a Democrat. Isn't it more of just convincing people to be active?
Actually, no. It depends on where you are in the cycle of the actual phone banking process or the canvassing process. Engagement with people to talk about the issues allows us to be able to talk to them about those issues, and you can convince somebody who cares about an issue to vote in their best interest. So if you are later in the cycle where it's just before the election. It's called GOTV, Get Out the Vote, which, by the way, whenever I saw GOTV, I thought it was GoTV. GOTV is Get Out the Vote. At that point, all that we're doing is we are calling people who have been identified already as being likely to vote for the candidate and making sure that they go to the polls. That is what you're talking about. Earlier in the cycle, we are identifying people based on the issues, whether or not they are likely to vote. And you can actually have dialogues. You can teach volunteers how to do persuasive conversation. I believe in persuasive conversation, though, to be about the issues so people vote the way that they want to vote. And so, no, we can actually change somebody who would have thought that they were going to vote one way to vote towards the Democratic candidate if they are voting in their best interest. And that's what people have to be convinced on, is what do they want, what do they care about in their issue, and which candidate is more likely to take care of their health care concerns, their concerns for gun violence prevention and safety. I mean, think about how kids today have been able to motivate adults to get off their tushes in a very important issue. It's not that this issue didn't exist before, but they convinced us to start talking about it. And that is a nonpartisan issue. But which candidate is going to be voting in the direction that you want to? You want to talk to people about their issues. So, no, it's not just about getting somebody who is likely to vote for your candidate to get out and vote, because there's a huge gap in there of those that are the undecided voters. Those are the ones that are the ones that are helping us to make this blue wave happen. Because it's not just about voting for Republican or Democrat. It's about voting for what do they care about and how is that going to get done for us.
And one of the things that is universal is the need to make people understand what the issues are. And, you know, I've mentioned this several times over the last few years, but de Tocqueville in the 1850s, when he came over from France to look at American democracy, said, American democracy is really wonderful, but it will fail if there is not an educated voter constituency. And so you have people today that are motivated by emotion and in many, many ways vote always consistently against their own self-interest. And so I wonder how many people would be able to be persuaded to vote a different way if they really understood the implications for themselves of how they vote. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tamara Levinson, Executive Director of Grassroots Democrats HQ. And we're talking about engaging people in the election process. So what are the tools? We talk about phone banks. What else is there that we can use? Is it this canvassing? That's even more difficult, isn't it, knocking on people's doors?
So I think about it as a continuum of engagement, of opportunity, and there's not one that is the only one that we should do. So canvassing and face-to-face interaction with a voter is absolutely the very best way of engagement to convince anybody to talk about anything, because you can look at them, you can see their body language, and you can have a dialogue. The second best way becomes engaging is a phone call. Then we also have texting, which is a new technology that came out in the electoral process. I believe that was first rolled out. Don't quote me on this one for certain, but I believe that it was during the last presidential campaign, and we have seen texting as a growing way of engaging our voters. And then there's also letter writing and postcarding. If you think about which ones have the most ability to change somebody's way of thinking, it's going to be the one where you can have the most interactive conversations, but volunteers can get involved in any one of these ways. And each one is an important way of engaging a voter. Studies show that you have to touch a voter numerous times. So you might want to have a postcard go to them that is also backing up a phone call that happened, and then you have somebody going and knocking on the door. The most beautiful conversations that I know happen is when I hear a canvasser say that they went and they knocked on a door. They had just gotten a postcard from a volunteer for a campaign, you know, sometime in the month before, and they acknowledge, oh, I got that postcard. maybe it was a happy birthday postcard, or maybe it was just one on an issue, it spurred them to think about something. And when the voter then, the volunteer gets to the door and can talk about the issue with them, one built upon the other to get that voter to change what they were thinking.
One of the things that frustrates everybody is robocalls. So how do you get past that? I'm here thinking what a wonderful job you do, but if you called me and I didn't recognize your caller ID, I'd slam the phone down because I'm so angry about robocalls. That must be this tension between people just rejecting cold calls and something that's actually a valuable call. How do you deal with that?
So I really love that question, to be very honest. I love it when a volunteer, and I might be training 100 people, 200 people, and somebody raises their hand and they want to stop me and say, but wait a minute, you're here to teach all about phone banking and give us all the techniques, but they want to stop me by saying that it isn't actually useful. The truth is, they're wrong. So do people...
Tell us what you really think.
No. Do people pick up the phone less often today than they did 10 years ago or 15 years ago? Absolutely. But that's why I talked about that there are all those different ways of engaging a voter. So depending on where you are, whether it's a rural community, whether it's different ages of people, there are different ways of actually reaching them. So as a volunteer, what we teach people is you may have to pick up your phone and dial it 10 times, 12 times before somebody actually picks up the phone. I don't care about the 10 dials that you had to use your finger to dial the telephone. I care about that 11th phone call when somebody actually picks up and you're able to engage somebody. So it is that phone call that we care about. And when people start to get frustrated, how much time it took them to reach anybody, one of the techniques that we actually recommend people do for a phone bank is actually to put bells on a table. And there might be 40 people, 10 people, 3 people, 20 people in your space phone banking. And when you can hear a bell that somebody actually reached somebody and they got the response that they wanted, that is like Pavlov's dog, right? The person who's sitting a couple tables over is like, wait a minute, I'm going to keep going because somebody made that connection. So what I want people to remember, because we actually run a remote phone bank system, you don't have to be at a physical office or somebody's home phone banking. You can be doing it alone at home, or you can be getting your 10 friends together. And what I want people to always remember is it isn't what you're experiencing in your own space, but at the same time that you're phone banking across the country, people are phone banking on that same list for that same candidate, and somebody is always getting a pickup on the phone. Somebody is always engaging somebody. Same thing with the text. You might send out 100 texts and you get back responses from a certain percentage of them, but picture that how many volunteers are out there doing the same thing. The aggregate number of contacts that we are making with the voter is what's making this blue wave happen, because people are engaging, people are caring, and they are voting because of that.
And this is something that young people can do too. This is not just for adults. So we have a lot of teens that we focus on this show. Not just for community service, but for their own sense of participation. Can teens be effective in making calls?
Not only can they be effective, but the Grassroots Democrats headquarters started a fellowship program and a Young Dems program. It's my favorite group to work with, because what those young people do when they come in, and I had 23 young adults phone banking in the summer, and I looked at it, and after an hour, I said to them, you guys are the best phone bankers that I have. When I have the same space with 40 adults in it, and they're all complaining, oh, I want to go and do a postcard rather than make a phone call. And the kids said, well, that's kind of lame. And I said, well, you're right, but the reason is because this is there's no studies on this, just my interpretation. They don't remember that 10 or 15 years ago, everybody picked up the phone. So for them, it becomes a game of, I will dial the phone until I reach somebody. Then I'm going to have that engaging conversation. And when I get what I want, I'm going to be happy. And the other thing is, to be honest, when somebody speaks to a young person, you can hear the difference in somebody's voice. When somebody speaks to a young person, they listen more. I learned this particularly, to be honest, because my daughter was a political activist when she was younger. She volunteered whatever cause we were doing. And she would say to me, you know what, Mom, when I can be in a room and I've been given a seat at the table to work, the people wherever we go that I might be talking to listen to me more because I'm a young adult. And so when you can teach young adults to be articulate in what the issues are, they sometimes have more effectiveness than we do as adults.
Isn't it cool to be following in your daughter's footsteps? you're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tamara Levinson, Executive Director of Grassroots Democrats, a lesson we're getting today in how to actually participate in democracy. So why is it more likely that a Republican will vote than a Democrat? Well, what is the genes? Are Democrats lazier?
I don't necessarily agree with that statement. So I would, I think that it's just about getting people who care about an issue to actually go out and vote. If you see how the elections have been going in the recent past, what you just said doesn't really make sense to me. So I believe that we just have to identify what the issues are and motivate people to go out because they want their issue. They care about health care. They care about the economy. They care about the environment. And when they care about what that issue is and we have made that connection for them that their vote matters, they're going to go out and vote. And it also differentiates by the population that you're talking to. And we have to do our best job to be targeting different populations for the issues or the concerns that they have and talk to them about what those issues are. So it doesn't matter to me if you're a Republican, a Democrat, or you are an independent. It's what are the issues and what does the candidate stand for? And then you motivate them to go out and vote.
So if you look at the other team, what are they doing? Are they doing... Phone banking, canvassing, text—they doing the same thing that you're doing? Is this where they do it a little bit differently?
This is my personal opinion. They didn't quite see what was coming at them during this midterm election, but they are out there doing these same things. I just think that we happen to be doing it better right now.
And better also requires more than just a script, and I guess that could be a particular challenge with younger people. If you actually get to the point where you can engage a caller, you're going to go beyond the script. So you need to make sure that the people on the phone actually know what they're talking about.
Yes. So what it is that we do for the Grassroots Democrats headquarters is we actually provide people with a information library that gives a background on the candidate. It gives the publicly available talking points on what the candidate's standing for. We also provide information on the district that people are calling into because we want people you don't just call into your own local area. You are learning to take your hat off of who you are, learn about where you're calling into, and represent that area and those people's interests. We also then provide people with what I call the election process FAQs. When you are on the phone and you're talking to somebody, they're going to have questions like, wait, how do I double check if I'm registered to vote? Where do I go to vote? How do I find out where do I go? So we also provide all those pieces of information to the volunteer so that they have the tools necessary in order to have the full dialogue with the voter on the other end from nuts to bolts. On the other hand, what we also teach our volunteers is they don't have to be the expert. So what I mean by that is that no volunteer should ever be scared away from doing work like, oh, my God, I don't know enough about this. I don't know enough about that candidate. We give you the basics of everything that you really have to know. But if it turns out that you get somebody on the phone who has a very deep question and they want more information, not a problem. You can take down that person's information. Somebody from the campaign who has even more information is going to call the voter back.
Okay, so there's two ends to this this story as far as I can see. The first is to get people to understand the issues and what is good for them. And then the last part of it is to get them to vote. So when you have somebody on the phone for 20 minutes and it's a good conversation in September of 2019, do you follow up in October of 2020? Do you have a mechanism for getting them to actually get up and go and vote?
Well, first of all, I'm giggling a little bit because I don't want to give a misperception that every phone call you're having is a 20-minute phone call. They normally last anywhere from less than a minute to 10-minute conversation. It depends on how engaged you get into a conversation with somebody. And what happens is the campaigns are maintaining this information and the data, and they then will be identifying that if you marked off on the record sheet that is being kept that somebody is engaged with that candidate, they might be asking questions about certain issues, then there is follow-up that happens later. What is very important in the work that we're doing now as well, during this early voter engagement, is that we are, I call it cleaning the list. Nobody likes to scrub a kitchen sink. They don't really like to wash the bathroom floor. But we have lists and lists and lists, and somebody has to clean them. So right now, sometimes what we're doing is just identifying, is this person likely to vote, and identifying a vote for that candidate or vote for the issue that you are engaging in. But we're also cleaning the list. Is it a good phone number? Did they move? Are they deceased? Is the person who answered the phone speaking a language other than English? And then your question about will there be follow-up to that phone call? Darn right there will be. That's the whole reason why we do phone banking and canvassing and door knocking and those engagements. It's so that we can help to categorize and get that reply back to the voter that is necessary, or take them off of the list. So when you get to that GOTV time, we shouldn't even be calling somebody if the phone number isn't right, if they've moved, et cetera.
Do you have language flexibility if someone picks up the phone and answers in Spanish? Do you have someone always there that can speak Spanish?
We do not. But what I am very excited about at the Grassroots Democrats headquarters is that we have a growing number of native Spanish language voters. I personally have been doing this for 2 years now. And I started off in the grassroots movement with a group called Code Blue, and it was just a network of volunteers across the country that wanted to be working. I've taken that same group of volunteers, and we're now where we are today. So we have groups of volunteers that are native Spanish speakers. We have groups of volunteers that speak Korean. We have groups of volunteers that speak different dialects of Chinese. So that what happens is, there won't be somebody necessarily in the room at the moment when you get somebody in one of those languages, but the campaign maintains that information. So then they will be cutting, it's called cutting turf. There will be another turf cut of just likely Spanish language voters or likely Korean language voters. And then those lists will be given to people who speak those languages. So what is really key, I call it having a superpower. I personally do not have a superpower of speaking a language other than English. It's actually not very good. I think I should have learned another language more fluently. I did learn some languages. I don't speak them fluently now. But it is a superpower when somebody has the ability to engage a voter in their native language, and those are the growing groups of volunteers that we're getting as well.
So how much information flows the other way? So you're on the phone, you, in terms of the universal you, you're going to get a lot of information that could be very useful to the campaigns beyond that particular voter. Do you summarize and share information that can be helpful?
So there are campaign finance laws that we have to follow, and they differ by different states. So we get publicly available phone banking links from the campaigns that we're working on. And there, if you've ever done phone banking or you have gone door knocking, there are forms that you are filling out. And that information goes back to the campaigns. We don't maintain that information. So I would not be keeping any information on a voter and sharing it with anybody else.
No, I don't mean on a voter. I mean, let's assume that after 2 weeks of successful phone banking, you find out that the most important issue in this area is the environment, and the candidates aren't talking about the environment. You have a way of calling people involved in the campaign saying, hey, you know, we're learning. It's like a big focus group. We're learning that the environment's really important, and you're not touching on that. In terms of information flows, not about the individual, mm-hmm. but a general view of what people in the area care about.
That's actually, so the campaigns have their own field staff. They have their own political directors. And the really good ones, what they're doing, which I think there are a lot of really good campaign staff out there, that's exactly what they're doing. They, we are giving them the volunteer manpower of connecting campaigns and what they need with the volunteers. But the campaigns are the ones that are doing exactly what it is you're saying. And so you will see pivoting happen. I watch a campaign cycle as I'm volunteering, and I see that campaigns begin to change the language or the questions. And then if you're really watching the news, you can see that the candidates start to change what they're talking about, because when we're doing the volunteering, we're helping them to be collecting the data. And that's exactly what those awesome, amazing campaign staff members are doing when they are have been hired and doing it for their campaigns.
There are some,
that is their job.
There are some voters that are single issue, you know, if right to choose, if you're against right to choose, you're out of here. If you're living in a red state, if you don't care, if you don't want to have gun availability, you're out of here. Do you find that that's still the case, that there are many, many, many single issue voters where you have to overcome that?
There are some single issue voters. And we're not, when we do our work, we will not be able to get every voter that we talk to vote in the direction that we are calling on behalf of. And if somebody is that single-issue focused, those are not the voters that we're trying to go after. We are trying to go after the ones, if you think of a voter as a continuum, right? You have the ones that are the absolutely going to vote in the direction that we want. You have the ones that are absolutely not going to. And then you have the ones that are in the middle. What we're trying to do is we want to get the ones that we know are going to vote to definitely just get out to the polls. Like, you don't have to spend a lot of time on them other than convincing them that their vote matters. But there's that, those, there are the ones that could flip this way or they can flip that way. And those are the ones that we are really working on. The ones that you're talking about that are never going to, because they have one issue, that's all they're going to care about, they don't care about anything else, we're very polite to them on the telephone. Politeness, kindness is what is always important, because if somebody picked up the phone or answered their door or answered a text, we take the high road no matter what, and we say thank you very much, and you move on.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tamara Levinson, Executive Director of Grassroots Democrats HQ. And we're talking about the effort to get people involved in our elections, which is something that you would think everyone should be automatically interested in, but that's not the case. So recently, Tom Friedman from the New York Times wrote an article, and he sort of did a riff off of the old, it's all about the economy, stupid. And he said, it's all about the environment. And, you know, the question is, even though the environment is absolutely, if you believe in climate change, probably the most important issue over the next 50 or 100 years for everybody, it doesn't have the kind of sex appeal that other issues have. How do you tap into that? If Friedman's right, how do you make the environmental issues sexy?
Well, that's an interesting question, because climate change is already causing irreversible damage to our planet. And we all know, those of us that are active in this, that we have to act now. And Republicans still don't even believe that this is an issue, and the Trump administration is continuing to be rolling back signature environmental policies passed by the Obama administration to be protecting our planet, water, and the air. We continue to be the only country, along with Syria, that is not signed on to the Paris Climate Agreement. So if you're sitting here talking about how do we make it sexy, right now, you know who's making it sexy are those young adults, the ones that are out there on the front line and making adults wake up. And if you think about that adorable young woman who sat out, and there are pictures of her sitting there with her sign just all by herself a year ago, and today we have thousands of people swarming into the streets about it, I disagree with you that it's not sexy, because it has been made sexy. And we are so lucky to be partnering with young adults that we are opening up seats at the table to be helping us to see how important it is.
So if you finally get somebody to vote, what if they can't? What if they're afraid, or they get resistance from the person at the polling booth. I mean, voter suppression is a real issue.
Okay, so one of the things that I actually talk about, and people can't see me do this, so I want everybody to picture that I have my hand open, and I have five different fingers. One of the fingers is some people are going to be out there, and they care about the issues. And some people are out there like me that are teaching people how to be doing phone banking, and some are helping to hold our people accountable who have been elected in, elected officials. And thank goodness there are some people out there that are fighting for voter rights, the ones that are fighting on the law side, the ones that are ensuring that people can get to the polls and that the polls are being watched. And if you put all your fingers together, you're going to make a fist. And that fist is what's making the blue wave happen. So I believe that we need to be working on voter suppression at the same time that we're working on each of these issues. And voter suppression has to be worked on from the legal perspective, but it also just has to be worked on that people are watching the polls, that people are helping people to get to the polls. And the other piece, when we are talking to voters, we have to let them know that it's safe for them to go to the polls. And that's an educational perspective. That is some of our work. I was just talking to the chair of the Fresno Democratic Party, and I told him that I was going to be speaking today, and I said, gee, can I use some of your quotes that we just talked about? And he said that they had done a study that was particularly working with their Latino community, where they have to, that people don't realize that, one, how important their vote is, or that it's safe to actually go vote. And so what our job is to help reach those voters and to help them get to where they need to be, to let them know that their vote is going to matter and help them to do that. So voter suppression is something that we have to work on, because we could phone bank until the cows come home if, one, people are not registered to vote, and, two, they don't actually have the ability to vote. So we have to fight for that.
So when you go home at night after a busy day of talking on the phone, how do you relax? Do you pick up the phone and call your friends?
That's really funny. I believe that activists today aren't doing enough to go home and just relax as well, because every single day there's something new that when you wake up, it's like playing whack-a-mole, that you think that you have something under control and another darn gopher in that game comes up because you didn't even anticipate that it was going to happen. So I think what we all have to do is we have to be appreciating each other more. We have to thank each other more. We do have to take time to open up that bottle of soda, that can of beer, or that cup of coffee, and be able to sit back and relax with our friends. But the other thing that we have to do is we have to make the work that we do fun. So when I'm training volunteers to do the work that they're doing, or I train phone bank leaders to be the leaders, we tell them to make it fun. Because after a long day of work of what we're doing, we better have made that day as enjoyable as possible. Because the truth is, in the old days, a campaign cycle would end and we'd be able to have a break. Now it goes on and on and on. So the key in my mind is to make what we're doing and what we're doing with the people that we're doing it enjoyable.
You know, it's interesting because the technology has changed now, where I know my wife was doing phone banking where she did it at home, and the computer program would just dial for her. And so you could sit home and do it at your leisure. But you mentioned before the idea of the bell. And that's not a new idea. The stockbrokers used it in the 60s and 70s. They always put people, no matter how big a producer they were, in the same room. They wanted the energy of somebody saying, I just got a deal, and you're sitting there, you know, looking at the baseball score, and then all of a sudden you wake up. So do you find less productivity when you put people at their home? It's more convenient, but they don't have the energy of the room.
Okay, first of all, I got to tell you, I would like to engage you as a trainer for our phone bank system, because you're keen into all the right issues. You do get more productivity when people are together because they feed off of one another. So you might get somebody to phone bank for 2 hours, or to text bank for 2 hours, or 2.5 hours, or 3 hours if you're all together. On the other hand, people can't all get together. So the technology exists today to do remote phone banking. That's exactly what it is we do. During this midterm election, when I was the manager for a headquarters, we had about 1,800 volunteers that walked through our doors. But we had more than 2,000 individual volunteers who were phone banking at home alone. We had people that are all over the country that can be doing this. So during this last North Carolina McCready campaign is a really good example. We actually created what I called the 20-dial challenge, where we were giving those phone bank links. We gave the training, because you can do a Zoom call training to be training people. They have the training in writing in a manual online. And they had a 20-call challenge. And they would literally just do 20 calls a day. Because how long does it take you to do 20 dials, right? You do 20 dials, you might actually reach 3 people, and you do that every single day. Now, do I really think when I put out a 20-call challenge a day that everybody's doing that? No, but some people take that challenge, and they might sit at home like your wife, and maybe she did it for an hour and a half because she's really motivated. Somebody else is going to do it for their 20 dials. But that created opportunity for people to have engagement. What I believe, we need to make things in bite-sized pieces that people can do. It then doesn't seem overwhelming. And then a portion of those people decide, ooh, you know what? I want to become a phone bank leader. And then they contact us. We train them, and they start to bring 20 of their friends together or 2 of their friends together. So this is what grassroots organizing is all about. It's engaging the person where they are, how they can do it, and then building their level of engagement to the level that they can do.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tamara Levinson, Executive Director of Grassroots Democrats HQ. And in the short time we have, I look at this thing that AHA does, which is Sing It Out. Sing It Out is a thing where people get up on a stage for the first time after spending 3 months learning how to sing, even if they can't sing. And it's a breakthrough type of an activity. It's not about singing, because half of the kids really can't sing. But it gives them the confidence that they can get up on a stage and perform. I would imagine for young people, beyond the good things that they're doing, this is really something that will help them feel confident in the real world. This mm-hmm. is a good activity for kids to do, not just for community service, but in terms of expanding their toolkit.
Yes. One of my favorite projects that I'm doing is this Young Dems program and the fellowship program, empowering young adults to be able to do real work where when they walk away, they know that they made a difference because they understood the issue. They either texted to a voter, or they recruited a volunteer to come and do something, or they imparted information. How about just when we did get out the vote for a weekend, and they knew that they enabled somebody who did not otherwise, wasn't otherwise able to get to the polls, but somebody said, I need a ride, and they were able to get that ride for the person to get there. We are empowering young adults to know that their voice matters, that they can engage adults and teach them something, and they can make a difference in their democracy.
And I think the other thing that it does is it illustrates directly that if someone says no to you, it's not the end of the world, because someone may say yes the next time. So for kids that, you know, get beaten down, the idea of being beaten and then succeeding is a resiliency builder that I think is really important for young people. So I think this is something people should do, even if they're not that interested in politics. It's a good way to build up their emotional intelligence. So is your group, does it look for money?
Yes, we. the truth is that we actually exist completely and utterly on donations. We do not get grants or anything from any governmental agency, and so the only way that we exist is people making donations. So I do encourage anyone who wants to volunteer their time or make a donation to the Grassroots Dems HQ, you can go to www.grassrootsdems.org. You can follow us on social media as well. We have a Facebook page. We have Instagram and Twitter. That's at Grassroots Dems HQ. And if you are a young Dem, a student, I encourage you to go to our Instagram account. Grassroots HQ Young Dems, and you can find ways that you can get involved and become empowered.
It will make me feel better. There's no way I can join the Young Dems, right?
Is that? You cannot, but you can donate to ensure that we can keep that program going.
Okay, so donate, you can donate on your website?
On our website, there is a donate tab. It's at www.grassrootsdems.org.
Thank you, Tamara, for being here. Thank you for all you do. And thank you all for listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll see you next week.